Hello, my Walking with Jesus friends. Do you sometimes struggle a bit finding practical application to spiritual truth? In the past few days, we've been looking at a very significant event in history. It's often called the Jerusalem Council. It's recorded for us in Acts chapter 15, and the issue at hand was a big deal, and for some people, very complex and far-reaching in its practical application. Please remember all the disciples that Jesus selected, who later became the apostles taking Jesus' message to the world, were Jewish men. They'd all been raised deeply rooted in all aspects of Judaism. Jesus spent almost all of his time with Jewish people in the Galilee region or around Jerusalem. Yet Gentiles, non-Jewish people, were responding to the gospel of Jesus in large numbers, first in Jerusalem, then Samaria with Philip, Acts chapter 8, then in Caesarea with Peter and Cornelius, Acts chapter 10, and finally with Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary journey in Acts 13 and 14. Most of the Jewish believers in Jesus felt quite strongly that Jesus' gospel was intended first and foremost for Jewish people and then possibly for Gentiles. But many felt the Gentiles must participate in Jewish traditions, rituals, and ceremonies before being eligible to be saved and considered legitimate followers of Jesus. Now, that would include circumcision for the Gentile men, memorization of the Ten Commandments and all the laws of Moses, and living faithfully in adherence to them. Yesterday, we saw how Peter and the apostles finally resolved this hot debate, declaring that the Gentiles, anyone in the whole world who is not Jewish, who had trusted in Jesus for their salvation and received the Holy Spirit from God, would be received as legitimate Jesus followers without participation in or adherence to the Jewish laws. I think the word cataclysmic is not an exaggeration in describing the implications of this declaration. Let's rejoin this historic scene in Acts 15:12 as Luke reports what happened next. The whole assembly became silent as they listened to Barnabas and Paul telling about the miraculous signs and wonders God had done among the Gentiles through them. Do you see that while Paul and Barnabas had verbally expressed the wondrous story of Jesus, and they had given personal testimony of how Jesus had changed their lives, it was also the powerful working of the Holy Spirit in miracles that convinced the Gentile people of the truthfulness of Jesus and his gospel. So, may I ask an important question? If you have trusted in Jesus and the truthfulness of his gospel, what convinced you it was true, and how has Jesus changed your life? Have you experienced some miracles? Luke reports something very significant happened next. When they had finished, James spoke up. "Brothers, listen to me. It is my judgment that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. Instead, we should write to them, telling them to abstain from food polluted by idols and from sexual immorality, etc." Acts 15:13-21. Now, who is this James? You may recall, James, the disciple and brother of John, was killed by King Herod, Acts 12:2. There was a second disciple of Jesus named James the son of Alphaeus, Luke 6:15. But this James, in Acts 15:13, is neither of those men. This is actually James, the half-brother of Jesus. You'll find him named in Mark chapter 6, verse 3, and referred to in Acts 1:14, where Luke describes those who came back to Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives and the ascension of Jesus. Luke writes, "They all joined together in prayer along with Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers." None of Mary's children had believed Jesus to be the Son of God until his resurrection. Then they understood and they trusted in Jesus. This James, a half-brother of Jesus, became a passionate follower of Jesus. In fact, he evidently had significant leadership skills, for the apostles drew James into key leadership of this Jesus movement in Jerusalem, as we see here in Acts 15. By the way, almost immediately after this meeting in Jerusalem, James wrote a 5-chapter letter to the Jewish followers of Jesus, explaining in great detail what the decisions reached at this historic meeting meant and how to apply it practically in life. That letter was distributed all across the Roman Empire where Jews lived, and you'll find that letter toward the end of our New Testament as the little book titled James. Now, we need to be sure we understand something here. James was not declaring in this statement in Acts 15:20 that Gentiles must do these things mentioned in order for them to be saved. Oh no, they had all agreed, Gentiles and Jews were all saved completely by God's grace through their faith in Jesus and his full atonement, death, and resurrection. These were practical things that James was helping the Gentiles see should be the tangible evidence of the authentic work of the Holy Spirit in their lives. So, I have another question for all of us all around the world. What do you see as the practical things which authentic followers of Jesus Christ do or don't do, which is evidence to a watching world of the saving, life-transforming work of the Holy Spirit of God in their lives? Now, don't rush past that question, my friends. Ponder it deeply. Make some notes in your journal. Read the question over a few times, talking to Jesus in prayer about that question. And consider what it says in Galatians chapter 5, verse 16 to 25, about the evidences of the Holy Spirit in your life. Something has been stirring in my heart for a few days as I've been pondering this event in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. I've been pondering why James felt the need to send a letter to the Gentile followers of Jesus, cautioning them about their behavior. Now, here's a powerful question that I've been wrestling with. Are the following two tangible evidences of the Holy Spirit working in the life of a true Christian? Number one, that I have a holy hunger to be a person who wants to live a holy life that is honoring to God in every way. Is that evidence of the Holy Spirit of God at work in my life? Number two, that I have a spirit sensitivity, so when I see or hear something that God views as not right, not God-honoring, then I feel a stirring in my spirit. That stirring is the Holy Spirit aligning my moral conscience with the holiness of God. Now, here's an important question for all of us to consider. If I do not have a hunger to be a holy, God-honoring man, and if I do not have a sensitivity in my spirit to a stirring from the Holy Spirit when I see or hear things that God views as immoral or wrong, should I be concerned that the absence of those things may be an indication that the Holy Spirit of God is not active in my life? And what might be reasons for this? Well, maybe because I've quenched or grieved the Holy Spirit so often that I've grown calloused to any work of the Spirit in my life. Or maybe I've never been authentically born again, regenerated by the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit does not live within me. You see, my friends, this big meeting in Jerusalem was challenging every person to look deeply into their own lives and seek to discern if they had genuinely experienced all the life-transforming work that God wanted to do in them as they trusted Jesus for their salvation. As we close today, I invite you to do the same. And here's a great worship song to help you in this. The link is in my notes, as always. And God bless you, friends, as you look deeply into your heart.